This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Part meditation, part ethical investigation, part wilderness survival guide. Miles Olson's Unlearn, Rewild blends philosophy with a detailed introduction to a rich assortment of endangered traditional living skills. Olson's book has been called lyrical, humorous, surprising, enlightening, and thought-provoking. It's a unique and thoroughly unconventional manual that will make you question what it means to be civilized. Miles Olson says he's generally guided by a burning desire for truth, understanding, and connection to what is real, important, and beautiful. We're joined on the phone by Miles Olson.
Welcome to People First Radio, Miles.
Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us a bit about your background before rewilding?
My background before rewilding consisted of being born in 1985, Vancouver, B.C., growing up on Vancouver Island, mostly in Courtney, and having what I would consider a fairly typical North American upbringing. There was always nature around, kind of lurking on the horizon, the mountains on the horizon and the ocean and the forest. Like, I lived close to a nature park, and nature was always around, but I had a stronger relationship with TV and skateboarding and all that stuff than wild nature. But it was always around. And I guess the human constructed reality that me and everyone else is born into and given as the option to join and find a place within just seemed dead. It seemed like there was got to be something better. And that's why I decided to go live in the woods, was to try and see if it was there, that something that was more alive.
Okay. In an interview with Alex Smith of EcoShock Radio, you give an insightful description of your wilderness initiation at the age of 17. Can you tell us what led you to that island experience and how it affected your future?
Like I said, just a feeling of hollowness, I guess, that I felt like was my future and my destiny if I just remained in the status quo and got a job that was within the normal confines of reality. It was kind of trying to escape to something more alive, more exciting, more meaningful, that didn't feel hollow and dead. So when I was 17, I went and lived on this island by myself for a summer, and anyone who's spent a lot of time by themselves, especially in nature, knows that it kind of smashes you to pieces, and it kind of is a really powerful detergent that cleanses the ego and recalibrates the way that you see reality in yourself. And that experience of being kind of initiated to a reality outside of mass consciousness, something totally unmediated by the human consciousness, that kind of put me on a path of trying to integrate more with the living world, trying to live in balance with it and explore what that could look like for me.
Mm-hmm. So the title of your book is Unlearn, Rewild. You're starting to talk about some of the things that we need to unlearn in order to heal our relationship with the earth. Could you say a bit more about that?
Sure. Well, I mean, everything in the living world exists in this state of interconnectedness and aliveness and flow and grace that we would just call wildness. There's this fundamental driving force that everything in the world is acting from this impulse to live, to grow, to die, to feed, to nourish, to be reborn as something else, except for humans. We've got this dysfunctional way of existing that's completely separate from the rest of the living world. And And I guess my initial experience of going into nature alone was one of just being alone in nature or wherever, a lot of the illusions that separate us start to naturally fall away. A lot of the constructs in our minds that separate us from the rest of reality, from the rest of the living world, start to just slip. So basically, unlearning is a process of dropping all of this human illusion, all this human crap that separates us from the living world. Because as much as we're separated physically, the root of our physical separation from the living world is the way that we see it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. One chapter that really spoke to me, and certainly I found you almost brutally honest in your book, is the one on being white. I'm also white, so I guess I identified a bit. You unflinchingly confront the horrors that have been perpetrated by white settlers and soldier explorers who were confident in their superiority over the indigenous peoples. Can you tell us about coming to terms with that heritage?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, when I write about it in the book, that's kind of all I really do is be brutally honest. I don't have an exquisite intellectual roadmap as to how we, as someone who has heritage as a colonizer, for me, I don't have some roadmap to make that okay within myself. But acknowledging it in all of its truth, and bringing awareness to it, and then seeing how I, in my own ways, not necessarily playing out racism or thinking that people are lower than me, but seeing how I'm still actually perpetuating those patterns, how those patterns are learned behaviors that we all still carry. It's like a contagious illness, and we've got it as a culture. So trying to flip some different switches to disengage from that illness and heal from it is basically where I go with that. Seeing it as a sickness, acknowledging that it's in me, and just that awareness starts to have a transformational effect. You know, bringing light to something starts to change it.
Hmm. You finished that chapter by saying, beneath the layers of poisonous miseducation, we are all indigenous creatures uprooted and displaced. And that made me think that you had come to peace with that.
Well, I've come to peace in the sense of not feeling guilt about it, and not feeling like I have to repent for some sins or something kind of, you know, really horrible like that. But yeah, that's essentially the truth. All of us at our core, do have a fundamentally pure nature, and all that other stuff is just all of this conditioning and all of this stuff that gets thrown on top of us. But I do acknowledge fully that I'm still uncovering the layers of wounds within myself.
Miles Olson lives on Vancouver Island in the rainy Northwest and has spent the better part of the past decade living off the grid at the forested edge of a small city. Miles Olson's book, Unlearn, Rewild, blends philosophy with a detailed introduction to a rich assortment of endangered traditional living skills. He joins us on the phone today.
You present a strong case for the superiority of an omnivorous diet as opposed to a vegan diet. Can you tell us something about your reasons?
Yeah, I guess my reasons are based on where I live and my experience living close to land. And I don't necessarily, actually, I really don't feel that an omnivorous diet is superior. But I guess I make an argument against veganism as a belief system in my book. because as soon as we have any kind of belief system, any ideology that's informing how we eat, then we've disengaged from reality. What I mean by that is once you have an ideology that's guiding you, you're no longer in touch with your body and what the needs of your body are, and willing to meet those needs, even if they contradict what you think should be right. And you're not in touch with necessarily the wild nature of the land and what it has to offer for you, what would be the most gentle and sustainable. Eating, you know, hunt. I get meat by hunting generally, and hunting in a lot of ways appears really violent and harsh and unsustainable to the untrained eye, and eating just plants seems much more gentle and sustainable. But at a deep level, when I hunt an animal, the only moment that I'm disturbing the flow of life is the moment when I kill that animal. Now, if I'm to cultivate a field of soy to get the protein, then I need to disrupt the field of life, like, from beginning to end. I need to create a field in the first place, then I need to remove all the other plants, then I need to ensure that they don't grow back so that only soy can grow, and then in the end, the soy has to die anyways. So when you really look, like, you kind of relax your field of vision, blur your eyes, and see, you know, things from a different perspective, there's a lot of merit for eating meat for certain people in certain situations. But again, I don't want to push some ideology that there's an ideal diet that includes meat, because for some people, maybe that's not true.
For anyone deeply connected to our earth, it can be a struggle to stay engaged and hopeful. As you put it, sometimes the weight of the world feels unbearable. Can you tell us about what allows you to keep going?
I guess what allows me to keep going, because I feel more and more excited about life all the time, even though, you know, I consider myself fairly aware of the complexity of the human situation on the planet. But I think, getting connected to that wild life force, or whatever you want to call it, that energy that the living world, aside from our culture, is completely exploding with, that we're detached from, like, reconnecting to that, that energy just keeps on going. That energy is tireless. Like, it's the energy of a plant that grows and grows and grows, and you cut it back and it grows and it grows, and we have that energy in ourselves, right? It's the energy that's, when I'm breathing, talking to you, it's like oxygenating my blood without me thinking about it. So for me, I think touching that and making sure that I'm reconnecting to that and not just drowning in the heaviness and sadness of our story that we're living in right now.
One of the things that you do talk about quite directly is the whole thing of killing and eating beautiful things. And one of your chapters, it reads like a meditation on the act of killing and eating beautiful creatures. Can you say a little bit more about how you came to that place?
What led me, because I had, like most people who start looking at the world around them critically and care deeply for the earth and animals, I had initially rejected the idea of eating animals because of factory farming, because of course it's obvious. Why would you kill an animal? You don't need to. But then, you know, I was exposed to different ideas, and I started realizing that if I wanted to live really close to the land, it was going to necessitate killing things. And that experience of really coming to hunting from a place of having respect and reverence and love for the animals that I was going to be killing and that I have killed, it's been a pretty profound one. And I actually just finished writing a book about hunting that is kind of an expansion of that chapter. I think it's really challenging for a lot of people, the idea that you could kill something in a way that has integrity and is loving and is respectful and honors life. But really, you know, if you're really highly paying attention to the act of hunting and what is all intertwined, because when you hunt something, you're not just killing it. You kill it, and then you eat it, and that's what makes it hunting. Otherwise, it would just be killing. And that process of taking a life and then transforming it into your own, you know, like continuing the life by taking it into your body and living is amazing. Like, it's mind-blowing, and it creates a deep sense. Like, I don't want to say deeper, but an incredibly deep sense of appreciation that most people who don't hunt couldn't fully understand, because you have this really interconnected, embodied, you know, connection to your food, to the animals that you eat. It just blows the mind.
Mm-hmm. Embodied seems like a good word for that, literally speaking.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're blurring the boundaries between yourself and them. So it's been kind of a surprising and paradoxical way for me to connect more to animals in a deeper way than I probably ever would have otherwise.
Mm-hmm. The second half of your book is entitled Endangered Skills, and it gives instructions on the skills and knowledge required for sustainable rewilding. How did you learn those skills?
I didn't use the internet much. I lived with a group of people in the woods for many, many years, and together we kind of just focused intently on learning skills, and we got books, we talked to people, we did tons of ridiculous trial and error. Sometimes people got sick, sometimes we just messed up, sometimes we were really cold. But yeah, it was a pretty funny journey of, you know, just banding together as a group of basically like suburban youth and trying to figure out how to hunt, forage, gather our livelihood.
Mm-hmm. We just have a moment left, so I'm going to need to thank you for joining us, and it was very much appreciated. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Miles Olson's rewilding journey has given him a unique perspective, vision, and toolkit to share with others through writing, teaching, and public speaking. You can find him online at milesolson.net. That's OLSON.net.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.